I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you all of you who think everyone here at Air America sits and has breakfast together. You know, it was great seeing Al and Randy and Stephanie and Ed and Mike and Sam and Janine this morning. We all gathered around and had eggs. It was terrific. Did you enjoy your eggs? Wasn't that nice that we had the big cookout?
Was that eggs?
See, great improvising, Riley. Yeah, it was eggs. It was oatmeal. I think you had...
No, I didn't have the oatmeal.
All right,
I can tell you that right now.
Oh, it's so weird to see those people in the morning, isn't it? But I'll tell you one thing. It is nice to see Brendan P.W. McDonald officially married.
Yes.
Officially married. Back from his Mexican adventure, where he... This is an interesting tale that was being
told. He went
told.
To the same town you did in Mexico, right?
He went to Oaxaca, but talk about where you stayed on your honeymoon there, Brendan, and good morning.
Good morning, guys. Yeah.
Good morning.
Glad to be back.
Yeah.
It was a former convent.
Yes!
That was turned into a luxury hotel.
The renegade Catholic.
Ooh, you
Brendan
sinner.
McDonald goes to a former convent to consummate
his
marriage.
Uh-oh.
That's beautiful. Did you feel it when you were doing it?
Did I feel what? The wrath of
the
God?
The wrath of God. Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. If that was the wrath of God, it felt pretty good.
God, he works in mysterious ways, my friend.
Yeah. Brendan, there goes your heaven card.
Oh, he threw away his heaven card a while ago. So was that was in Oaxaca or was that in the other place?
That was in Oaxaca, and we were also on the Pacific coast of Mexico at Puerto Vallarta, which was a beautiful town as well.
Yeah? So you didn't get any hurricane action down
there? No, none at all. It was very nice weather. The hurricane was pretty isolated on the Yucatan area.
And Dawn had a good time. Everybody had a good time.
She did, and we had a great wedding, and it was great to just kind of flush my brain for 3 weeks and enjoy married life.
I can't even imagine what it's like to be without us for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And now...
And now, Brendan, you're fired.
So, well, what else? We just got a nice letter, Riley. I think I should read it, ease into this show. Fellas, Mark et al., I wanted to jot you a quick note to thank you for doing such a great job. I've listened to lots of talk radio in the past, mostly NPR, but until recently... I had not discovered your show. I suppose I should mention parenthetically that I am a soldier, an officer, fighting in Afghanistan. After reading an article on the subject of podcasting, I finally sorted out how to subscribe to your show, which I now listen to as often as I'm able, basically when I'm near a base with an internet connection. You guys sound like you have a genuine good time with your work, which I think contributes to the genuine feel of your show. Indeed, you have all the qualities of a morning show that a political junkie could ask for. Let me amend that to a liberal political junkie, which describes myself. You have the mojo and the energy of a good morning show, along with great discussions and guests. And of course, I agree with all your political philosophy on all the important subjects. All of this without the requisite jackass laughing like a hyena at stupid jokes in the background. Now, I don't know if he's getting you, Dan, or if...
The podcast eliminates him. Is there
an anti-background podcast? I'm kidding, buddy. I mean, you're not going to talk?
He don't care. He's leaving town.
Yeah.
You're not going to talk? That's it?
I'm not so convinced that was an insult in me.
No, good. You're right. That it wasn't. I'm just being the, douche. All right, but here we go.
There you go.
I'm just being an idiot. Hey, well, so here we go. Oh, well, this is the part I like. Keep up the good work, and don't forget there are lots of good people counting on you to educate the American public, including a number of us in Afghanistan and Iraq. Keep fighting the good fight, and we'll try to do the same from our end. And I'll let you know if we ever get Osama bin Laden. So far, no luck, but we're still working on it.
Well, thanks for your service.
Yeah. How great would it be if that guy called into the show?
He can't.
With Osama.
He's podcasting.
With Osama.
Yeah, he was like, I got him, you guys.
I just wanted to give you guys a scoop.
Right.
Go ahead, say something. Oh, no, I cannot. But no, he said we couldn't mention his name and that kind of stuff because it's actually, he's not allowed to do that. He's not allowed to even write us that letter, apparently.
What?
Well, apparently.
What, do you have to smuggle it out?
No, hold on a minute.
Oh, wait a minute. Was this an email?
Yeah.
Oh, it was an email. Okay.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, he's just, the Army doesn't take kindly to active people, you know, speaking while still in uniform. Yeah. I mean, it's not a law, but, you know.
No sensors in cyberspace.
All right, so let's get on with these indictments already. Enough of this crap. I'm tired of waiting. I'm tired of speculating. I want to know. But here's what we got out there now, you know, outside of being exhausted from wondering what the hell is going to happen. Libyan rover expected to be indicted possibly today, but we've been saying that for days. But look, we're going to say it again. At least five others are named as well in a bill of indictment that has been around since like October 17th. So let's get on with it. Stephen Hadley, as Riley has been talking about, which is one of his bets, is mentioned as well. I don't know who the other three are, but it's looking like Libby Rove and Hadley for sure. But you didn't think Rove was going to go down, did you?
I didn't think Rove was going to go down. And I have to tell you, this Patrick Fitzgerald is the most exquisite tease in the history of Washington politics.
Yeah.
Every pundit in this town has had something, some kind of prediction about how this was going to go down, and no one has yet been predicted right.
Hilarious.
Everybody thought yesterday that the indictments were going to be handed down yesterday. Every newspaper in town, the indictments are going to be handed. Did they hand down the indictments yesterday? No.
No, I sat through three cycles of CNN International almost killing myself.
Oh, my God.
And waiting for something to happen. Oh, my God. This is a such stupid story sometimes.
No, look. What Fitzgerald is doing is what a good prosecutor does, which is keep his cards very, very close to the vest until he's ready to deal them. So all these pundits can talk about all of the different things that flow from his talking to the grand jury yesterday and meeting with a judge in closed session for 45 minutes. We don't know what it means. We'll know what it means tomorrow when, in all likelihood, whatever is supposed to happen will happen. But I got to say, Fitzgerald, you got my salute because most prosecutors are not able to play this kind of thing that close to the vest.
Well, there you go. You've got Mark Riley's salute, Fitzgerald. And if you're listening, give us a call. Call us, 866-303-2270. You know what? Even if you want to pretend to be Fitzgerald, why don't you call us at 866-303-2270, and we'll just say it's credible for a few minutes, and we'll all laugh. Yeah. Look. But here's the bottom line. Obviously, he's going to come out with indictments. Now, there's suggestions. I heard someone mention that he rented new office space and he's going to convene another grand jury. But this is the thing that interests me. According to one source that I read here, there may be indictments for violating Joe Wilson's civil rights.
That would be interesting.
Right? A civil rights violation? It would be based on the slander and him disabling his ability to get work in D.C., of hurting his family. And what an interesting angle that I've never heard anybody talk about. I got this off Larry Johnson's blog. Larry Johnson, a frequent guest of our show, ex-counterterrorism guy, ex-State Department dude, CIA guy. So he was on CNN, too. I saw Larry. Something going on.
Need a little hair replacement system.
I'm not sure what's going on Larry's head, but, you know, he's a good guy. But what do you think of that? What do you make of that? How does that surprise you, as civil rights violations?
Let me tell you something. It does surprise me. Let me tell you why.
Yeah.
In many instances, civil rights violations, federal civil rights charges are brought when state or local governments fail to indict people, for example, a cop for beating up a black guy.
Right.
All right. And in many instances, what has happened is federal civil rights charges have been brought. In many of the incidents that took place in the South where prosecutors did not go after people who had murdered black people, they were eventually convicted on federal civil rights charges.
So it's kind of a lightweight charge in a way.
No, you can go away for a good stretch on a civil right. Yes, you can. There have been a couple of people, by the way, who've been sent away for double-digit years on civil rights violations charges. A lot of these federal charges are flexible in terms of the amount of time that you end up doing, but understand that a federal civil rights charge for violating Joe Wilson's rights might be very difficult to rebut.
Mm. Oh, okay. So it's an airtight charge in a way.
It's a very difficult charge in this instance, I would think. And I'm not a lawyer. I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea here. But I think that if he brings this civil rights charge, you're going to have I think his lawyers, whoever is charged here, will have a very difficult time trying to untrack Fitzgerald's charges.
Okay, well, there you go. And also, I want to remind people that, look, you know, these Republicans were trying to trivialize this by saying that the crime itself is not being indicted. He's not investigating the crime. It's just BS. It's, you know, he's trying to investigate other things. He's stretching. Look, in the Iran-Contra, and Watergate, these were cover-ups. There were a lot of perjury charges. There was a lot of lying under oath. This is the way it goes. There's still crimes. Don't let these dummies, you know, tell you differently. Anybody who's hanging their hat on the idea that this is not a real crime, they are real crimes. This is the way governments come down. This is the way governments are prosecuted. Sometimes they do their crime so well, the only thing you can nail them for is the crime of lying about the crime. It's 15 past. We'll be back in a second with some information out of Florida. You know, God forbid we blame FEMA again. So what does Jeb Bush do? I'll tell you in a second if you don't already know. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Thursday, I believe it's Thursday. Hey, Mom, call us up here at 866-303-2270. Let us know if you got electricity, you know, because I'm reading this story here, and I talked to my mother a couple of days ago. She lives in Florida, and she still hadn't had electricity. And now, you know, we found out who to blame. Apparently, it's Jeb Bush is to blame. He's taking the blame for it. People all over Florida are having trouble getting food, water, ice, gas. The logical reaction these days would be to say, well, FEMA screwed up again. It's FEMA's fault. Why not? They kind of suck at this stuff. Well, we know that, but I guess Jeb knew that his brother was in enough hot water around too many things to take another hit, you know, with government incompetence on a federal level. So he took the hit for him. He basically said, don't blame FEMA. This is our responsibility. So there you go. Little brother Jeb taking the hit for big brother W.
You know what I find very, very interesting about this story?
Yeah.
Over the last two or three months since Katrina,
mm-hmm.
there have been more and more pundits who have been kind of hinting around, like saying, well, you know, in Florida, they don't have these kind of problems. Why was New Orleans so unique? They're all hurricanes, you know, the hurricane this, hurricane that. Why was Katrina so unique? Why should people focus on New Orleans? And why did things go so horribly wrong in New Orleans when they seem to go right every time there's a hurricane in Florida? Well, now we're starting to find out that, hey, they don't go right every time there's a hurricane in Florida.
That's right. We got Jeb covering his brother's butt. We got a Morning Sedition Radio Theater coming up in a few minutes that I haven't even heard yet because Cashman wouldn't let me hear it.
And really?
So I'm kind of excited about that. We just got an email here. Did my mother call by any chance? Is she listening? No. We just got an email here. White Sox victory of what America could be. A Jewish owner, an African-American general manager, a foreign-born Hispanic manager working together to achieve the pinnacle of success. To top it off, an African-American most valuable player. Now, obviously, this guy is excited. What America could have been if it had not been for the right. That comes to us from Louisville, Kentucky. A guy named Dennis just emailed that in.
Amen.
Yes. So now I have, of course, been completely out of the loop. I didn't even know that was this a popular World Series? I mean, usually
not in terms of ratings. Chicago and Houston are not the two biggest markets in the country. It's not like the Yanks, Red Sox, or, you know, it wasn't a compelling matchup, in part because the White Sox will always be the second best team in the city of Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago belongs to the Cubs. Just ask Cashman. He'll be the first one to tell you that.
It's true.
But, if, you know, what's interesting
We've
about
We've got validation.
Yeah, but he's right. Yeah. You've got a manager from Venezuela, Ozzie Guillen. Mm. You've got Ken Williams, who was an African-American general manager. Two of them played together on the Chicago White Sox
right.
back in the day. You've got a Jewish general manager, Jerry Reinsdorf, who was also the one that got like six rings with the Chicago Bulls.
Hello, how
from,
are you?
Yeah, from New York. He's a New York guy. So yeah. you have here a situation where a rainbow coalition of people came together to make this team win when nobody, you know, go back to the late August, and Pashman will tell you, in August everybody wrote the White Sox off because they were going through a very horrible losing streak. They had a 15-game cushion on the second-place team and ended up coming down to about 2.5, 3.5 games. Everybody thought they'd tank.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turned around and won like 16 out of 17 or 17 out of 18 going into the playoffs. An incredible run based on pitching.
All right, there you go.
And, and actually, they beat a team that was a majority of white people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, there was not one black person on the Astros.
Hey, wait a minute. You didn't count the ball boy, did you?
Well, and, George Bush Sr. was in the stands in Houston last night watching the Astros lose.
Yeah. I think Barbara left before it was over. His H.W.'s wife, W.'s mother,
right,
was in the stands at Houston. Apparently, you know, got over the whole thing about isn't everybody doing great.
She was
great.
Disappointed that black people were doing so well on the field.
On the field, yeah. So, my goodness.
She was, I'm going back to the Superdome to see how they live for real.
For real, yeah.
But speaking about this, so, hey, Riley, we were just talking about on the break how the makeup of Patrick Fitzgerald's grand jury is predominantly, it seems, from the report, African-American, which is interesting.
A majority of this grand jury. Now, remember, grand juries, unlike petit juries, which are 12 people, right, are 23 people for a grand jury. And this one has been in panel for two solid years. There have been some people coming in and people coming out. But you have a majority of black women. Middle-aged black women.
That's a good jury.
Yeah. You've got two black men on the jury, I think three older white men on the jury. And what you have here is a situation where, and I you know, I don't want to generalize, I don't want to stereotype, but I do know that when black Washingtonians get a chance to look very seriously at wrongdoing by white Washingtonians who couldn't find their way to Anacostia with a map and a metro card.
Yeah. Justice will be served.
Right.
Yeah.
Indict.
Well, here's an interesting bit of justice. I think this is interesting because we've talked about this. The Davis-Bacon Act, the White House reinstated this. This is a wage protection act that they repealed to encourage contractors to hire people that would be willing to work for less than minimum wage, you know, after Katrina down in New Orleans. The Davis-Bacon Act requires all contractors to pay prevailing minimum wage of the state they are working in if they're being paid with federal money. Now, apparently when Bush did this, he was throwing contractors a bone by saying, look, we can get rid of this and you can have, we'll just, you know, you can just have the entire country of Mexico come up and rebuild New Orleans if people are willing to work for a nickel a day and no health care coverage. Well, apparently Democrats, labor unions, moderate Republicans, you know, bullied him a little bit, and I think he must have realized that at this time to first be confronted with the realities of FEMA dropping the ball and showing how people live, how you know, poor people live in New Orleans, the idea of the press possibilities of just waves of immigrant workers taking over jobs that should have been given to people who live there, that the people that live there should have been given the opportunity to rebuild their own city at a reasonable and decent wage, would have been just too much. So Andrew Card, White House chief of staff, he comes out and he says they're changing their mind. We're putting Bacon Davis back in. I don't know what this means for employment possibilities in that region, but it's back.
Well, you know, we had Malik Rahim with us the other day, and he talked about the fact that there are literally large numbers of undocumented workers. Now, he said they're undocumented. You don't know. They could just be legal immigrant workers. But you had, for example, unionized electricians who lost their jobs because a Halliburton subsidiary came in and hired people for less money. And that's what happens when you get rid of Davis-Bacon.
Well, we'll see if those jobs go to the people that live there. Maybe it could help bring people back to their home city.
Nice.
It's 27 past the hour. We got the iNews and Morning Sedition Radio Theater. Stay with us.
Mommy was a hostess. Daddy was a drunk. Cause they didn't love me then.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition Old Time Radio Players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater. Today we finally answer that burning question, what if everyone on Morning Sedition was a girl? Let's tune in now to Morning She-dition.
Welcome back to Morning She-dition with Martha and Martha. Later on, we'll have Joni K Street, Sister Milfington, and of course, Bruce Cherry. But first, it's time for Martha Riley's Bitch of the Week. Who's your bitch this week, Martha?
Same bitch it is every week. My ex-girlfriend, Tracy. She'll sleep with anybody. She even slept with our technical producer, Crystal Lopresto.
Oh, let go of it. We were drunk. It didn't mean nothing.
I'm not talking to you, Crystal. You'll stay in that booth if you know what's good for you.
And that's Martha Riley, bitch of the week. Now it's time for the iNews 5000.
Dinner!
Today's headline, Ellen DeGeneres finds new love. Ellen DeGeneres finds new love. Translation, Martha Riley's ex-girlfriend now sleeping with Ellen DeGeneres.
Laughing, that's not funny.
Na, 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 yeah.
Come out of that booth.
That's how it would be if everyone on Morning Sedition was a girl. This has been Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Oh my God, that's the new show. We screwed ourselves on that one. If anyone's, maybe we played that early enough for no one not to hear it say, go, oh, there, that's it. That's the idea.
Crystal LaPresto.
Oh, you tell me. The weird thing is, that was actually Chris. Yeah. Oh man. So let's go ahead and do the iNews then.
Hey.
do we even need to set it up? Yeah, you know what it is. Come on, really. If you're just getting on board, I think you'll figure it out. From Reuters, Bush tries to revive support for Iraq war. Bush tries to revive support for Iraq war. Translation, Bush tries to revive support for Bush. From, all right, I know. It wasn't, you know, we wanted more out of that, but that's what we got. From ABC News, poll, most Americans lack confidence in leaders. Most Americans lack confidence in leaders. Translation, administration losing war on reality. From the Indianapolis, maybe we had the girls in here. From the Indianapolis Star, McDonald's to post nutrition info on food. All right. McDonald's to post nutrition info on food. McDonald's adds horror story to Happy Meal. All right. There's another one on there. But
what was it?
This is a sciencey one, you know. It wasn't, you know, that was the best one. You know what I'm saying? I'm not holding out on you.
Someone wrote, you know, like for hours on that joke. You're like, eh.
Well, maybe we'll try that. No, they didn't. All right. Let me. 2 hours of solitaire and like, oh, okay. All right, and then back to solitaire. Here we go. I'm kidding. That's mean to me to say, but I saw Danny Goldberg playing solitaire in his office the other day. That was encouraging.
Oh, yeah.
All right, here we go.
He's an important guy here.
Yeah, that's what I hear, you know.
A lot of the decision.
Yeah, that's what I hear, man. Some of them, he's the only one making them. All right, here we go. I'm in Holland. This is an email. This is an email from a guy. Maybe this will work. I'm in Holland, and I get you on the web. I can't get through, and I have something to add to the current political debate, a new word to be entered into the American lexicon, and that is neoconvict. Not bad. That's not bad.
Not bad.
Let's get into that then. As we know, Prosecutor Fitzgerald, and we've been talking about this, but we haven't talked about it in a specific sequence of events. There are new indications. We know that Prosecutor Fitzgerald obtained an Italian Parliament investigation into the forged Niger documents alleging Iraq's interest in Niger uranium. Now, this is really what's at the core of this leak case, is that you had these documents that the administration used to justify their claims, and Joe Wilson goes down there and says, well, the documents, you know, the documents aren't on the up and up because there is no Iraq acquiring uranium. It's not happening. Now, in connection with these documents, Fitzgerald may be looking into a former CIA agent named Dwayne Claridge, a military consultant to the Iraq National Congress. That's General Wayne Downing, and head of the Iraq National Congress Washington office, Francis Brooke. Now, the reason this is interesting to me, Riley, and you can flesh this out a little more, is that the Iraq National Congress was Shalabi's organization. Shalabi,
yes.
Of course, the guy who was facilitating feeding Judith Miller with the crap that she put in the New York Times, which turned out to be BS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he's involved in these Nigerian forgeries, what you see is that there could have very well been an organized effort on behalf of, you know, ex-CIA guys, ex-military guys, putting together a completely, a full apparatus through Shalabi to put out false information into the world and try to funnel it through the CIA to validate it and then up through the administration.
Yeah.
So if that is true, man, this is big deal.
This is a very, very big deal. And it's a big deal in part because when they tried to run it through the CIA took one look at the documents and said, hey,
These are forgeries.
Right, the Italian documents, but they certainly gave some credence to some other information, which they took a hit for.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because they took the White House at one point tried to make the CIA take the hit for the Italian documents, even after the CIA said they were false.
Right.
What you have here is an extraordinary confluence of events and a confluence of government interests. You have Shalabi and his INC on the one hand, whose interest was in running Iraq. You had the Italians, whose interest was in making their intelligence service, the SISMI, to put them up in the major leagues by currying favor with American intelligence. That's why the Italians ended up being the conduit for this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that apparently the original stationery for the forgeries came out of the Niger embassy in Rome.
Yeah. Now, explain to me again why the Italians became the conduits.
Because they wanted to curry favor with U.S. intelligence and with George W. Bush. They saw this as their opportunity. And remember, now you're talking about Berlusconi, the Italian version of George W.
Big free market dictator guy.
Big media owner as well. Because remember that the first person that had these documents was a journalist who worked for one of his magazines.
Okay, well, who set up the Italians, Riley? I mean, if these documents weren't in Italian and they weren't created by the Italians, it seems to me that there's another link to this, which is if these ex-CIA guys who were doing the big dirty business, they're out there doing the big dirty business on all levels.
Uh-huh.
Did they set up the Italians as well?
They may have set up the Italians. There's a middleman who I believe his last name is Martino, who apparently was just looking to get paid.
That's hilarious. That sounds like one of those crime stories.
His last
name was Martino. A suspicious looking figure.
Yeah, I mean, these guys were up to their necks in this. They all knew the documents were fake, and there has been much rampant speculation that the real reason why everyone reacted so badly to Joe Wilson's report was because they really didn't want whatever American involvement there was, and we don't know this yet, but whatever American involvement there might have been in actually devising the forgeries to come to light, and now it's starting to come to light.
Well, it stinks because, on so many levels, if it'll ever be found out, this is one of the great, this has all the makings of one of the great conspiracies in terms of what really happened. And what's frightening to me is that this could have been happening in the mid-90s. They could have been putting this in place in the mid-90s, long before 9/11, long before there was any real methodology behind actually invading Iraq. This could have been being created and built in 96, 97.
Well, because there was the notion, and many of these guys also, by the way, were involved in that Israeli political action committee, mm-hmm. one of whose members pleaded guilty to some form of espionage.
The American-Israeli Political Action Committee?
Yeah. Franklin was mm-hmm. the guy's name, who copped a plea.
And how this all comes home to roost here in terms of, who we've been talking about is Stephen Hadley.
Stephen Hadley met with some Italian intelligence officials on September 9th, 2002, a very important date because that was right at the beginning of the ramping up. And remember, it was 4 months later that George W. Bush referred to the attempt by Iraq to purchase uranium in Africa. This thing, by the way, was so convoluted, Mark, that at the very beginning, they didn't even say Niger. Yeah. They said Nigeria.
Yeah, I mean, I made that mistake, but I actually shortened it to Niger, which isn't even a real place. All right, so remember when you had
it
to tell me?
It is just that's the English pronunciation.
Okay, well, I'm glad I was corrected on that. I remember that day. That was one of the many days where I'm like, oh, I'm stupid. Why don't I just learn how to say things before I get on the air? What are you guys having your own show in there? What the hell's going on? I'm sitting here talking to Riley, and in the booth there's nine guys in a circle laughing. They're like they're playing cards. What the hell's going on?
Hey, wait a minute. I know what that used to be.
Now we're getting a little military school action here.
That's right.
What's going on there? Anything?
We're talking about ordering a code red on you, Marin.
Actually, we're going to bring Brendan up to all the bits that we've done in the 3 weeks he missed.
Oh, so So were you playing him? Was there actually a radio show going on in there? You're just talking about
it? Everyone in here was playing different parts. Like Dan Pashman was playing Bruce Cherry, who we have coming up in a few minutes.
Yeah, Bruce has a hard time just playing himself.
Salacious was a favorite.
That was a good one. Yeah, it was a favorite of
people on your staff.
It's a favorite of women around the country who responded with emails, accusing Salacious as being just part of the underpinning of violence towards women around the world. That literally they were saying Salacious is the reason why clitorectomy still exists.
How about your friend though, your comedian friend, talking about, hey, women, when you're flying, your vagina.
Oh, I know. That really went over. That was tremendous.
I thought it was sheer genius.
Russ Manive, but it was so funny because our audience is so predictable on that level. He is a live audience, and he just throws out this one joke, which, you know, in your head, it's a very funny thing, but people were just sort of like, I don't understand any of that. Yeah. You can just feel vaginas clamping in the room.
You can almost hear their brains going like, error.
I think those are good moments. That's what I call the free zone. When you're a comic and you actually alienate the entire audience and there's that silence where nothing is happening, that is the free zone. You'll never be more present than that moment because it is so painful and weird and there's such tension around it. So I don't know if Russ looked at it like that. I think he just saw it as failure. But I tend to thrive on that kind of stuff. I should unlayer. I'm inside. I'm wearing like four things and I'm starting to sweat. That's not right.
You look like Professor Marin there with the tweed jacket.
I got the tweed jacket and the
is that the one you used in the Sprint commercial?
Yes, it is.
I knew it.
This is the jacket that appeared in the Sprint commercial.
Put it on eBay.
You can get my book Jerusalem Syndrome for about $100 now. I'm not going to see any of that. They put it out of print and they probably pulped most of them. But now people are like, I want to get Marin's books. Like, it's $900. I got nothing to do with that. I got the tweed jacket and the hip-hop sweatshirt. So I'm in both worlds, man.
Wow. And Al Sharpton and Professor Bill. Yeah, it looks good.
I got the stupid 3-day beard. In other words, I look homeless. It's 46 past the hour. We got Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week in a few minutes. Hang out. It's Morning Sedition on Air America.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
All right, it's 51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We got Bruce Cherry coming in here momentarily. But right now, if you're just tuning in, I think it's important that we get you up to speed on what we talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. President Bush's recent claim that 10 Al-Qaeda plots have been thwarted includes plans that were just on Al-Qaeda's wish list and not fully formulated plots. It turns out that several of the plots had only been pitched to Al-Qaeda after producers at CBS's Without a Trace turned them down. Other items on the wish list included breathable cotton beheading hoods and access to the 90 virgins before the suicide thing actually happens. That's before it happens. Before. California set an execution date for a convicted murderer and gang member who was later nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts to curb youth violence from behind bars. Stanley Williams helped build the Crips into a nationwide criminal enterprise that continues to spawn street violence more than 30 years later. For that, he was presented the American Business Award. If this execution goes well, California also hopes to put to death Jimmy Carter, the Dalai Lama, and Doctors Without Borders. Sex offenders in New Jersey will be confined to their homes on Halloween and forbidden from answering the door for trick-or-treaters. One sex offender said, quote, I think it's unfair. At the very least, I should be reimbursed for the Michael Jackson outfit I bought, the carousel I rented, and the hot oil slip and slide I set up in my backyard.
Hey, man, that's my state.
When you hear this one, sex offenders are not allowed to open the doors to trick-or-treaters. Unfortunately, the law doesn't cover them sticking something through the mail slot. Oh, hey, no. Mommy! What's that man doing? That's scary. But it's funny. All right, here we go. And that's obviously not funny. That's going to get me in trouble. It's not funny.
See what you know? What, tugging at it.
You know what? Pedophilia is not funny.
It's not funny. Yeah, no. What I did in my head though was I pictured the actual penis.
Wait a minute.
Coming.
Didn't we have a discussion about this once before?
Yeah, probably.
With somebody who swore. You know what was? It was with Lucy.
Oh right.
You remember that?
Oh yeah. That
lasted 3 days.
But that was hardcore. That was a Pashman line thing. That wasn't just. It was funny, of course.
I did not bring up the fist.
No. We're not. Don't do it now either. Do not do it now either. Here's what I did.
All I know is this. Somebody spent 3 days trying to convince this woman that this idea, which shall remain nameless, was funny.
She didn't
buy it. That's all I can tell you.
It was just so ridiculous that we just kept trying to sell her on it, too. But here's what I did in my head, and this is why I don't want to be misunderstood. I go ahead and took the joke one step further. I pictured, you know, a penis coming through a mail slot. And then I pictured myself, if I were a kid, I'd be like, oh, that's so scary. And then I'd be like, oh, that's funny. He's having fun with his pee-pee. So that was what I thought was funny, not the idea of pedophilia. Do you understand? It was the lack of pedophilia and the pedophiliac being resourceful by using the mail slot, which doesn't really hurt anybody, and it's sort of a silly thing all around.
And now 8-year-olds all over America saying, Mommy, what's a pedophilia?
Yeah, this is Mommy.
Well, I hope they would
what?
Know.
Oh. Yeah, but it's the parents driving their kids to work. Sorry, you know, about the discussion. But as we know, kids, peepees are funny. They can be, right? Especially, all right, here we go. Moving on. We should move on because we've done what we could with this thing.
I can't wait to hear what's
coming up next. Oh, come on. Yeah. 900 people were killed. You know? No, I'm not doing that again. That was horrendous. What the hell was I thinking? Do you have that on tape? You do, right?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's not do it right now. On October 6th, it's just a couple of days ago, Bush said that the U.S. and Allied intelligence operatives had foiled 10 al-Qaeda plots. Now, I'm assuming that some of these plots resulted in terror threats. And as it turns out, they might have just overreacted, okay, or reacted to some big ideas of suspected terrorists to maintain an increased fear in the nation. So this means that a lot of these terrorist plots that we've been hearing about, including the one that happened here in New York,
mm-hmm.
could just be some guy they have in custody going, I would like to blow up everything. And they're like, oh, my God, he wants to blow up everything.
No, let me tell you why this happened. Bush went to his people and said, get me some good news.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay.
Remember that this was at the beginning of his being buffeted around by all of these different storms that were going on. Katrina was still fresh in people's
minds. Oh, so this is October 6th, you're saying.
This is the background that led him to this point. He had to come up at that time with something that made it look like his administration was doing something right. So he came up with, of course, the idea that, well, we foiled these plots.
And then he got called on it by some Democrats, right?
Yes, he got called on it by some Democrats.
John Conyers and a couple of other people, different Democrats from a few different committees, from the Judiciary Committee, the Intelligence Committee, the Homeland Security Committee, wrote to White House Chief of Staff the day after. Saying, you know, what the hell is this? They want a detailed briefing. And as it turns out, it was just this. In at least six cases, U.S. or allied forces arrested suspects who revealed details of terrorist plots and operations they were planning or thinking about or imagining or fantasizing. In other words, there was not an operation in place at all about to be carried out. And they make they're very clear, I guess, in choosing language, like in the White House claims that it was careful to differentiate between actual disruptions and casing, you know, which are very different because, you know, disruptions are actual actions. Casings can be anything.
Well, yeah, casing can be walking by someplace.
Yeah, taking a picture.
The what's important about this is that Bush and his administration are still trying to do this in the face of much worse scenarios that are going on around him.
And what's also important, I guess, isn't it, Riley, that he can't get any traction?
No, he can't get any traction. He is sliding down a hill, and he doesn't know how to stop it.
No, it's a great thing. No, don't anyone help him. Don't anyone help him.
He's not listening to people who want to help him.
Oh, great.
So much the best.
All right, so it's 57 past. Bruce Cherry's on his way in, so hang out. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
It's time to go. We'll be right back.
Blah, 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 blah,
all right,
blah.
All right. It's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Hey.
It is Thursday morning. Let's just do a couple of quick stories here, and then we got Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week, which is always exciting and interesting. Don't clap for yourself.
Yeah, please.
It's not. All right.
So, unseemly.
Ixnay on the app play?
Okay.
I don't even know I'm here yet.
I know. But I said your name, and you literally, like a big ape, you were just like, hey, yay me. Yay me.
I'm just. We should probably go on.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. That was really great improvisation. That's excellent, Bruce. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Yeah, I'm going to become Don Rickles here. Sorry, I didn't mean to wake you up. Excuse me.
Go on with it, hockey puck.
Hockey puck. That's right. Where'd you get those sideburns, huh?
Ooh.
From, I don't even have one. All right, look, let's just do a couple of things. Let's get on with these indictments already, all right? It should be today. It should be tomorrow.
Tomorrow it's going to be.
You think so for sure? Friday? Why are they
Friday.
Doing it? All right, fine. Well, Libby and Rove are expected to be indicted possibly tomorrow, as are at least five others. There are names on an indictment bill that has been sitting around since October 17th. Apparently, Stephen Hadley, who was Condoleezza Rice's undersecretary.
And she's now national security advisor.
There you go. So he's looking like it's going to be him, but it surprised Riley that Rove was on the list. I'm not surprised. I thought he was.
Rove, now, none of these people, we don't know yet. I'm sticking with my prediction that Rove will not be indicted. Sticking with it.
I hate when you do that and you're right.
I know. All
right,
here, that's right. What time are we going to dinner, by the
way? I know. Right. Another dinner. We have to go on two dinners. So this was the interesting twist that we're reading from some sources say that there might be civil rights violations indictments some of these guys might have been violating Joe Wilson's civil rights by destroying his ability to make a living in D.C., which seems like a stretch, but it's an interesting idea.
It's an interesting idea, and it might be very difficult to defend against.
Right, and there's still talk of espionage violations. There's still talk of a conspiracy. There's still talk of treason and murder. Just kidding, perjury. Also, I just want to bring to everyone's attention that my mother may have electricity or may not. I don't know. I talked to her the day before yesterday. She's like, Mark, we have water but no lights. She said, "Oh yeah." She said she took a walk down to the beach. She's like, very sad. She's very sad. I couldn't tell whether it was because of the hurricane or she couldn't jog. But but apparently...
It's bringing to her exercise routine.
It is. Yeah. The hurricane completely screwed up for a few days. She's like, how am I going to get to Pilates if there's no lights and I can't drive with trees in the road? All right. So... okay. Well, but by the way, Mom, I just want to tell you that Jeb Bush is taking the responsibility for your lack of electricity. I mean, people all over Florida apparently were having trouble getting food and water, ice, gas. And obviously the logical reaction at this point in time is to go, well, FEMA screwed up again. They might have, Riley, but Jeb Bush was not going to let his brother go down like that. He saw his brother was in enough soup the way it was and says, all right, it's my fault. State of Florida, it's me. I did.
Yeah, yeah. He's saying it's his fault, and thereby sparing his brother the exact same thing that happened in the wake of Katrina. Sparing, by the way, the person that ought to be most grateful for this is Michael Chertoff, the guy who heads Homeland Security, because he would have been the one ending up taking the hit, quite possibly.
Yeah, and look, Michael Chertoff, enough with the casual shirts, all right? Put a jacket on. You're in charge of something. The hell is it with that guy showing up with the little polo shirts? Enough of that crap. We don't care if you're casual Homeland Security director. Just do something, for God's sakes. Hey, Cashman, we're going to talk to you in a second. You're going to Slovakia today?
Tonight I'm leaving. I arrive tomorrow morning.
To Slovakia?
Correct.
Do you eat, what happens in Slovakia?
Bratwurst.
You eat brinzová halušky.
Oh, wow. Of course. So I can eat that here.
That's his girlfriend.
Oh! Bruce Cherry on the tag. Tags it. All right, let's get on with this, then. Since we're off to a good start.
Let's do this little thing.
Yeah, let me read the intro you've prepared for me, Bruce.
Oh, God, not another one.
One of our writers, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on the show. His presentations have delighted the staff and listeners alike. What can I say, people? His pieces come from the heart, and they aim for the gut, passing through the funny bone on the way.
Yes. Now, you sound a little dorky, but I like that. Thank you.
I'm just your puppet right now. Now it's time for my favorite part of the week. Please welcome my dear friend, Bruce Cherry, for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
Well, thank you very much, Mark, for that very kind intro.
Hey, it came right from my heart, man.
This week, we're going to tackle the debate over evolution.
Okay.
And with a character who actually evolves.
Okay. Great. Oh, great. Great.
Political story, or a political point and story arc in one neat package.
Excellent.
And I am the delivery.
Okay. All right.
As you know, as most of the people know here, I'm something of an amateur zoologist.
Mm.
Mankind's closest relatives, I'm sure you knew this, chimpanzees, share 97% of our genetic heritage. But there is a subspecies of chimp called the bonobo that lives in Central Africa, and that has a... well, a method of conflict resolution that lends itself to comedic extrapolation. So,
wow.
No more need be said. Let's just go to script. Are you ready?
Them's some fancy words, mister. All right.
I'm known for my vocabulary, if not my humor.
Yes. I'm going to go ahead and read the script you prepared. The religious right can't accept evolution. Our next guest should make it even harder for them to deny it. He's a living, breathing example of primate evolution. Please welcome Trevor, the ever-evolving bonobo.
Thank you, Mr. Marin. May I call you Mark? Mm-hmm. I'm simply delighted to be here.
Now, Trevor, it's apparent that you are a very highly evolved. You're a monkey who talks with perfect diction, I might add. Plus the smoking jacket, the cravat, and the brandy snifter.
Well, it's simply a matter of breeding, don't you think?
you are a bonobo, Trevor, and I believe your species has a unique approach to conflict resolution. Why don't you tell us about that?
I'd be happy to enlighten your listeners. You see, bonobos don't use violence to settle our differences like, dare I say it, humans. Bonobos, myself included, resolve conflicts by, well, to phrase it delicately, by making love.
Okay, so when you have a conflict with someone, you just have sex with them.
Indubitably. And I might add, we have a large number of conflicts. To phrase it in the vernacular, we're doing it all the time.
Okay. I disagree with that approach.
Really? Tell me more.
Well, I'm no fan of violence, but I question the use of sex to settle arguments.
Well, if we've reached an impasse, there's only one thing I can do.
Uh-oh.
Prepare yourself, Mr. Marin.
Oh, my God. What just happened? Everything was a blur of pleasure, and I feel like I need a cigarette.
Well, let's just say I won the debate, my friend. Okay, I'm going to take a step back just for a second. You know what? The sound effect of a man being sexually assaulted by a bonobo was me just playing with doing a little hand thing. I went to Dan Pashman before this 2 days ago, and I said, I need the sound of someone being assaulted by a monkey. Not the actual sound, something that would approximate that. And he said, this is a quote, just do the... I made an example with my mouth. He said, just do what you just did. For your bits, the worse it is, the better it is. So if I got Dan Pashman in a little trouble, then that's fine with me because I feel I was disrespectful.
I got to be honest with you, Bruce, that I found the sound to be very effective, and I thought you had done some research, perhaps watched a nature show or two. Like, I bought it. Like, I felt that, like, I was being raped by a monkey.
Well, that's my primate training.
But then it worked. I feel dirty and weird, and I blame myself.
Excellent. It's okay. We're going back to script. You've just been ravished by an ape.
No.
Now someone enters.
No kidding.
Now just a dang minute.
Dang?
Wait, here we go. Chris Lopresto, why have you suddenly burst into the studio?
I saw what that monkey did to you, Mark, and I didn't like it one bit.
Well, Mr. Lopresto, it seems you and I have something of a conflict.
Yeah? You want a piece of me?
Why, you're reading my mind.
Holy crap. Where am I? Hey, I'm not giving up. I can take it.
Well, obviously, you just did.
Yeah? What are you going to do now?
Well, if I were any kind of gentleman, I'd send you flowers.
Okay, tough guy. I'm still standing.
Well, so am I.
Is that a threat?
Threat, promise. It's all in one's point of view.
What the... You never laid a hand on me.
That was hardly the point.
All right, that's it. Enough of this. All right?
Okay, I think Chris wants to say something.
Let me just say, Mark, and you too, Trevor, that was incredible. I didn't know it could be so good.
Well, there you go. Chris liked the thrust of the piece.
I think we were all doing some pretty good acting. I got to be honest with you. I'd lost entire touch with the fact that we were actually doing this mock piece, and I was in it.
It's like Tennessee Williams.
This was theater. Tennessee, exactly. Can you do Trevor in a southern accent? So what do you got? I think that's okay, but is it going to really fly? Does it have legs?
If you don't like the male bonobo, I could do something with a female character or some kind of female monkey. There's endless possibilities with, say, the term orangutan.
Oh, a Wango Tang. I get it, Ted.
Whoa, I get so excited I knocked off my headset.
It's not going to happen. But, you know, but thanks, Bruce. It was all very exciting. And, you know, we could. Are we going to take calls? Is that the plan? Or no? Is that what we're going
to
do?
I think that we'll leave this one up to you, Mark.
Oh, well, you know, if anybody loves Bruce and wants to call in, that's fine. You know what? I've got to prepare myself.
That was powerful. It was a powerful piece. You got
I admit that, but I'll tell you what I've got to prepare myself for. Janice Karpinski, General Janice Karpinski from the Abu Ghraib time is coming in here, and I'm terrified. Yeah. I'm just nervous. I don't know why.
Maybe we should keep Trevor in here.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Okay, yeah, let's do that. 16 pass Air America Radio.
She has no idea what's going on.
Which is fine. Apparently that's what she claims anyways. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
All right, 21 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Got Bruce Cherryson in here. I don't care anymore. Got an email. I am a loyal, avid listener of Air America. If I wanted to hear a quote-unquote zoo show, I wouldn't be turning to Air America. That's what I'm trying to get away from. In a word, this morning show sucks. So I couldn't help but write back, of course. I know, man. What's going on with me?
I feel like that was an oblique slap at the monkey sexual assault.
Oh, who cares? I told her. I said, "Well, then go away, you ass."
I have. He's a nice guy. Well, I have one thing to tell that listener.
Hey, if she's so loyal, or he, or whatever it is, if they're so loyal, they should know what this show is by now, the loyal listener. That's what I'm trying to get away from. Run away from the funny. It has to be all serious. Why aren't they doing something important? All right, look, we got a couple of calls about Bruce Cherry's bit, about his pitch. What do you got there, Brian? What's on your mind? In Taiwan.
Well, I'd have to say it's the best ever because I don't want to have any conflicts with Trevor.
See that? I've won the listeners with fear.
Keep him on.
Yeah, I really love you. Keep him on. All right, thanks a lot, man. Taiwan, we got people all over the world. Okay, now we got Kirby in Rockford, Illinois. What's up, Kirby?
Hello.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not much.
Yeah, and what do you think of Bruce?
Well, I think Bruce's piece was so funny that even I feel violated.
Wow. Reaching out all the way across the country, Bruce.
Here's the irony. I was originally brought on this as kind of a buffoon, and now it's like it's the most resplendent thing in the entire show.
Things haven't changed that much.
It's the sun rises when I arrive.
Thanks for your call, Kirby. I appreciate it. All right. That's it. Thanks, man.
Oh, okay.
I just closed down my call bank. Are there more calls there? I did it by accident. So, Bruce, we're going to get ready here. We're going to gear up
for
Janice Karpinski. Yeah. You ready?
I had a lovely time.
Are you going to hang out for Janice Karpinski?
No. I don't feel that as the monkey rape guy, I would be really it would be appropriate for me. Now you're getting back into issues. So
no, I kind of wish you'd just be here with your big sweet self and your long gray hair and your weird sideburns, just to sit and look at her, not say anything. I'd like you to be in here, and we don't even introduce you. You know, Karpinski just sits down, and you just sit there and don't talk.
I just stare intently at her.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Occasionally make the monkey ravish sound.
Yeah, you represent the conscience of the country. Do you think?
Just I'll give her disapproving looks.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, can we do a little news?
Absolutely.
All right,
sure.
Thanks, man. So now, Vice President Cheney, if we can do the awkward segue thing again, which I'm getting so good at. You know, it's weird. I got a little anger. You know. All right, here we go. Vice President Cheney is proposing that Congress legally authorize human rights abuses by Americans. All right? Now, the Geneva Conventions, not even Geneva Conventions, but cruel and inhuman abuse by anyone is banned by an international treaty negotiated by the Reagan administration that was ratified by the United States. Cheney is proposing that we congressionally authorize human rights abuses by America. It's already known. We already know the Justice Department in Alberta, Torquemada Gonzalez, have approved nasty interrogation techniques, torture. Anything up to death is just questioning. I mean, look at Abu Ghraib. People have died from these policies. And the vice president has been this huge prime mover behind this this administration's violations of the Geneva Convention, and to and basically to go against the history of how the military practice in these situations. Now, this is the scary thing about Cheney, is that he told several Republican senators that Bush would veto the annual defense spending bill if it prohibited the use of torture by U.S. personnel.
Wow.
Right. So, thank God the senators ignored him, and in an amendment sponsored by John McCain, it passed 90-9, so they just threw it back in the face. But how can you have a vice president? Well, it makes complete sense that this guy would do that, but literally, this bill was to approve the use of torture. Am I right?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, you're right, number one. Number two, he's not finished. Even though it's been passed, he's now trying to get members of a House Senate Conference Committee to adopt language to nullify the McCain Amendment. This guy is off the deep end. And remember, the CIA is currently, as we speak, holding a number of prisoners in secret detention centers overseas, and that is in violation of the, well, not holding them is in violation, but they have refused to register those detainees with the International Red Cross, which is a violation of the Geneva Conventions. And what Dick Cheney is trying to do is codify this kind of ignorance of international law on this issue. And what makes it worse, Dick Cheney knows that if you start torturing people, if Americans start torturing foreign nationals, guess what's going to happen to Americans when they get in the custody of foreign governments?
Oh, man.
They, too, will be tortured.
And also, what we know from every professional or every expert that we've talked to about this subject is that torture does not render results. It doesn't it doesn't get you information that is valid. I mean, when you're torturing somebody, they're going to say whatever the hell you want them to. And this is how these guys go about doing this. This is thematic to this administration. They bend information, they bend intelligence to suit their needs. So if they can squeeze something out of a guy that validates their point of view on something, then they've succeeded, even if it's got nothing to do with the truth.
Absolutely.
It's mind-blowing how this administration operates, and I hope to God that this momentum that's going on right now, I hope to God that with these indictments, at least there's some momentum in this country to realize that these guys are crooks, they don't have the nation's security or in the nation's interest in their minds at all. They don't care about people. They think people are disposable, just disposable fuel for their agenda. And we're going to talk about health care in a little while, but right now we're going to bring Janice Karpinski in here if she's still into it. It's 27 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Let's get right into our guest situation here. Janice Karpinski was commanding general of Abu Ghraib when Lindy England, Charles Grainer, and their crew piled prisoners in naked heaps, forced them to wear leashes imposed in front of them for photographs seen around the world and disseminating the U.S. image abroad. Karpinski was demoted because of what happened at Abu Ghraib and is the only Army general to be disciplined so far. She maintains that she has been scapegoated, and she joins us live in the studio this morning to tell us why. Good morning, Janice.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I tell you, I was nervous because I've only seen pictures of you in uniform, and you're casually dressed. You look very nice.
Well, thank you very much. But I'm the same person.
Yeah, okay. So we just read this horrendous truth about Dick Cheney wanting to legislate international torture, and obviously there was a culture of torture involved in what happened at Abu Ghraib. So who is really to blame for the abuses there?
Well, you know, the blame we know today, of course we didn't have any access to the documents at the time, but we know today that the blame goes all the way to the top.
Okay.
That shortly after 9/11, there was an approved departure from Geneva Conventions because the prisoners were terrorists or associates of terrorists, and the feeling was that they needed to get down on the same level as the terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first mistake, in my opinion.
Now, but I guess the big question that everyone wonders and everyone asks is that, you know, you were there. How could you not have known what was going on? You know, it seems that how could it have gotten by you?
Well, saying that I was there is very much like saying you were in the United States. How
really?
Could you not have known, you know, the planes attacked on 9/11?
Right.
Iraq was a huge country, of course, and we own 17 prison facilities spread all over Iraq. Abu Ghraib was the largest. Of course, it had the notoriety from Saddam's regime, but it was only one of the facilities under the 800th MP Brigade. And I didn't live at Abu Ghraib. My headquarters was not there. It was over at Camp Victory, the headquarters for General Sanchez's command.
Did you feel like, I guess one of the issues was there was a lot of people going in and out of Abu Ghraib that were obviously contractors or operatives and officials of different organizations. Did you feel taken advantage of by these guys?
Not in the beginning. We were managing Abu Ghraib as with a plan for it to be an interim facility. It was never a good place for a prison operation of any kind. Located in the middle of the Sunni Triangle, no overhead cover. They were being mortared every night because the people that lived around Abu Ghraib, on the outside of Abu Ghraib, were largely anti-coalition. So they were mortaring and attacking. Small arms fire was a routine out there, unfortunately. But the people that came and went initially in the first couple of months, they were very cooperative. We had a relatively small population of Iraqi criminal detainees. It was actually when the so-called security detainees started to arrive at Abu Ghraib in record numbers that things actually got out of control.
Now, Janice Karpinski, you've written a book, One Woman's Army, The Commanding General of Abu Ghraib Tells Her Story. Tell us the sequence of events where they literally isolated you from the facility where you were supposed to be the commanding general.
Correct. The military intelligence brigade commander took control of cell block 1A and B because these security detainees that were being housed in those higher security cells, inside cells, they believed had more intelligence value. So if you bring in a group of 50 security detainees, the military intelligence interrogators speak to them, determine that two or three or four have more intelligence value, and they want to isolate them. They want to segregate them from the general population. At that point, when these other detainees are determined to have no further intel value, you would think that they could be released, but not at Abu Ghraib. They were held anyway. So these individuals are now in the isolation cells, and this cell block is under the control of the military intelligence interrogators. And I still could visit my MPs there, but only during the daylight hours.
Now, if you went there, what would they say to you? I mean, if you said, well, I want to see what's going on inside this particular block, what would they have said to you? Did you do that?
Yeah, I did. I had MPs that were working the detention operations there. I spoke to MPs. I spoke to military intelligence people casually because they knew who I was. I spoke to contractors. I spoke to prisoners. And nobody ever said or suggested or hinted that anything like we saw in the pictures was going on in cell block 1A or B.
But did they just say, you know, sorry, you can't go in there, there's something going on? I mean, how did they keep you out? I mean, you were a ranking officer there.
Well, I was, you know, the only female general officer commanding troops in a combat zone. But General Sanchez was a three-star. His deputy was a two-star. General Fast was a one-star promotable. And they all thought that they had a say in how we ran detention operations out there.
So they got together and just stopped you from entering this facility?
They held meetings discussing the progress of the and the effectiveness of the interrogations, and they conducted those meetings at specific times when they knew that I was not available or would drop in or overhear any of the conversations.
So they played you?
Absolutely, they did.
Incredible. Now, your book is not particularly charitable toward General Sanchez. What do you see as his culpability here?
Well, he's managed to walk away from any blame or responsibility. So you have, you know, going contrary to good order and discipline in the military, which has been tested for literally for hundreds of years, you have the Pentagon or General Sanchez himself trying to blame General Karpinski for not supervising privates and specialists on the ground in a cell block that is under the control of the military intelligence people. But nobody above me, including General Sanchez, is responsible, and nobody in between these young soldiers and myself, nobody in between is being held responsible, and that goes contrary to everything about the military structure.
Now, given that all this stuff we're finding out about, you know, these lies that we went to war on and this this leak investigation, and that there was a cabal within the White House that was basically guided by Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and the White House Iraq group, do you think that this type of behavior, this type of torture policy, whether it was secret or not, was something that these guys decided on? Does it go up that high? Did Rumsfeld and Cheney say, we got to engage in this?
Absolutely. I believe that. I think the documents are there and available. I know they are. I've seen copies of them with the Secretary of Defense signature on them. So you authorize a departure, more aggressive techniques, and you outline them, hooding, noise and light discipline, obnoxious music, sleep disruption, meal schedule disruption, whatever it might be. And that departure, that initial departure, then opens the door or other departures.
Improvising, evil improvising.
And no supervision to control that improvising.
Yeah.
Now, what role or what responsibility, if any, do you think Paul Bremer and the Coalition Provisional Authority have in all this?
Well, when we were rebuilding the prisons, our funding, we were told that our funding would come, our assistance would come from Ambassador Bremer's headquarters. And there were prisons experts there to kind of take care of that and do the contracting work. Well, they were drawing a lot of funding to do the contracting work, but none of the contracting work was done.
They stole it?
Well, it appears that somebody walked away with that money. And
got no services. Nothing was done in service of this money being given out.
That's correct. But that was part of the out-of-control environment down at the Ambassador Bremer's headquarters. Everything was paid in cash. So basically, any one of these contractors could take a contract saying, this contract's going to cost $1 million, for example. They took it to the finance office, and they drew $1 million in cash, dollars, U.S. dollars.
And just gave it to some guys.
And allegedly gave it to some people to do contract work.
So there was chaos everywhere, and it seems that the people that were trying to do their job in the military and oversee it effectively were shut out of this some very planned chaos, and that chaos had to do with robbing, you know, the money out of the treasury of Iraq and also torturing and killing their people. Now, what I want to know is, you know, as a result of this, how is what is morale like in the military? I mean, how did this affect American military in your eyes and in the eyes of the world? What do we lose here?
You know, we do in the United States have the strongest military in the world. And it's largely because our soldiers are disciplined and proud and honorable and honest and well-trained. And our non-commissioned officers can make independent decisions if they know what the objective is. Okay, I'll go out and do this fight. I'll go out and do this ambush. I'll go out and do this raid. But what are we trying to achieve? They don't know. They still don't know, even to today. Mm. So soldiers will continue to drive on. They'll continue to keep the morale up. But I know when we were there, when I first arrived in Iraq in the middle of 2003, in June of 2003, Reserve and National Guard soldiers felt that they had been duped because they left with orders for 179 days. And then without any discussion or consideration of what that means to a Reserve or National Guard soldier, they were just simply extended for 365 days, boots on the ground.
Now, Janice Karpinski, you were demoted. You say you were scapegoated, but you have both a military life and a civilian life. You were a general in the Army Reserve. What has been the impact of all this on both your civilian life and your military life? Some people say what happened to you on the military side would be a career killer. What about on the civilian side?
Well, what happened on the military side was a career killer. It could have been a Janice Karpinski killer if I had allowed it to be, but I had a lot of people that were supporting me, and I knew myself what the truth was. And I was determined to pursue this until the truth was known to everybody, because we're entitled to know the truth. And the soldiers who are sitting in prisons now who don't have a voice, they're entitled to a better opportunity than what they were given.
You mean the ones that were convicted on charges stemming from Abu Ghraib?
Yes, they were, you know, these seven...
Rainer, England,
the
Davis.
Seven so-called bad apples in all of this, they didn't design those techniques. They didn't decide on their own to go out there and take prisoners' clothes away and stack them on top of each other. They made mistakes, yes, and soldiers do make mistakes, and that's why we have discipline and punishment. But it wasn't fair because the other soldiers that were in those photographs, the civilian contractors, have basically walked away blameless, as did General Sanchez, General Fast, and all the way up to and including Secretary Rumsfeld.
It's really amazing to me how this administration is able to blame the agencies and the military for stuff that they set them up. I mean, you're saying that these contractors went in, you know, told these grunts how to do what they did, and then said, well, good luck with everything, and split. And then, you know, they went on ahead with their torturing techniques and all this stuff, and they get nailed with it. And these guys who were ex-CIA operatives, who the hell knows who the contractors were the ones that really instigated all this, and they walk away scot-free.
I can tell you that if they were ex-CIA operatives or OGA, other government agencies, we never would have seen this behavior. These were civilian contractors who had no background or training in interrogation whatsoever. They were given full authority
yeah.
to direct any of these things and no accountability or responsibility whatsoever. The Uniform Code of Military Justice did not apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
There were no rules
and they
for
took
them
advantage
to follow.
Of it.
They absolutely did.
So your new book, One Woman's Army, The Commanding General of Abu Ghraib, tells her story. Janice Karpinski, you always wanted to be in the military, and where do you stand with them now?
I'm retired from the military.
Okay.
Soldiers keep in touch with me, and I certainly keep in touch with them. I have every opportunity when I talk about the book to talk about how wonderful every day I spent with a soldier was. I believe that General Sanchez and that whole group believe that these seven soldiers from the Military Police Brigade and myself, because we were reservists and National Guard soldiers, we would just quietly take this punishment, these accusations, even though they were completely false, and roll over, go back to our civilian jobs and get on with life. Didn't happen that way.
That's right, and good for you for speaking out. The book, again, One Woman's Army, The Commanding General of Abu Ghraib, tells her story. Janice Karpinski, great talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for being here.
Okay, we'll be back with Johnny K Street and some lighter fare. It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
It's just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In a few minutes, we're going to have Maxine Waters, Congresswoman Maxine Waters from L.A. on the phone for Maxine's Corner, I think we should call this segment. She's here every week. But right now, there are a lot of big stories in the news this week, so let's get some bets down with our Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny K, where's the action, man?
Follows me, baby.
All right.
I don't have to tell you what kind of action I got this week. You already know.
Uh-huh.
I got Valerie Plame, Trader Gate, Karl Rove action, baby.
All right.
It's like the Super Bowl twice in one year. What could be better than this? The only time I've ever seen Rove sweat more than this was when he tried to run up the Capitol steps. Rove, Libby, Cheney, they couldn't be more wound up if they worked at a Starbucks inside a meth lab.
Yeah.
They're putting on a show, but you know they're losing it in private. Libby is walking around on crutches. He said he has a broken bone in his foot, but his dog is dead. Put two and two together.
So are you taking a lot of action on the possible Rove indictment there, Johnny, or what?
Am I taking a lot of action? I got so many politicians handing me money, I feel like a hooker at the GOP convention. If I knew Valerie Plame was going to make me this much money, I would have outed her myself. Oh, and if you're listening, Valerie, anything Johnny K can do for you, you just let me know. You got a gift basket coming, honey. Enough said.
Johnny, who's laying off more money on Rove, Democrats or Republicans?
It's pretty much even. Everyone wants to get in on a sure thing. Right now, Rove is an 8-5 lock to get indicted. You couldn't make easier money this week if you were a Republican contractor in Florida who went to college with Jeb Bush. You know what I'm saying?
All right, man. I want to cash in on Rove. Put me down for 2 yards, Johnny.
I'll take some of that action. Put me down for 3 yards.
Wow. What are the odds on Cheney, Johnny? What do you got?
Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
Cheney has worn out 2 mechanical hearts this week alone. But my line on Cheney is he's not going anywhere. Rove gone and Cheney gone, Bush would have to run things himself. And no one wants to risk that. Not even Patrick Fitzgerald. The chance of Cheney getting indicted, 100-1.
Oh, screw it. What the heck? Put me down for 500 on it.
Hey, Johnny, put me down for a C-note. How do you think the White House is going to react to all this bad news?
They're going to do what they always do, attack. Let's put it this way. Joe Wilson is going to take more hits next week than Willie Nelson at a normal rally. I'll give you 2-1 that within a week the GOP will be producing a picture of Joe Wilson wearing a turban, holding an AK-47, and hugging Osama bin Laden. And Patrick Fitzgerald doesn't know it yet, but in college he had a gay lover and sold heroin to children. And once he beat an old woman to death who cut in line in front of him at a Taco Bell. You'll read all about it in a story Armstrong Williams hasn't been paid to write yet.
I'll take that for a C-note, man.
Yeah, that sounds good, Johnny. Put me down for 100.
Hey, Johnny, with all the indictment action this week, people are forgetting about Harry and Myers.
You got that right. One of them is George Bush. No one knows what to make of Harriet Myers. You can get straighter answers from a magic eight ball. Rove couldn't keep his mouth shut, and Myers won't open hers. I'll give you 500-1 that Bush flips on Harriet Myers.
All right, I'm down for $2.
Put me down for a C-note.
Sorry, Johnny. The big question is, if Rove gets indicted, will he do any time then?
That's a long shot. Yeah. That's a long shot. Yeah. But I'm going to give Rove the same advice I gave my old friend Martha Stewart before she went in.
Yeah.
The first day, pick out the biggest, meanest inmate in the yard and shank them. After that, it'll be a breeze. Hey, it worked for her.
Johnny, Halloween is coming up in a few days. Didn't you have something you wanted to announce?
Yes, I do. Thank you for reminding me. This Saturday night, I'll be holding my annual Johnny K Street Halloween Casino Fright Night at the Sons of Italy Hall in West Orange, New Jersey. It's going to be spooktacular. All proceeds over and above a small operating fee will, of course, go to my favorite charity, the K Street Home for Wayward Girls Over the Age of 21. I think of all the projects I'm involved in, that one is my favorite. I'm out of here. I got to go to court.
All right, Johnny K.
Hi, Johnny.
Always good to see you. Be careful.
Man.
Be careful. Hey, look at this. I got an email here. I like this. I like the mix of the show overall. You make me laugh, make me piss me off. But, oh, yeah, can I say that?
Oh, no. Yeah, you already did.
I can't?
Yeah, you can. I'm just glad the me off was there.
Yeah, no, it's there. Sexually aggressive monkeys are a wonderful palate cleanser between servings of indictments and torture stories. Keep doing what you're doing. Self-important progressives are killing our chances to reclaim this country.
Uh-oh.
I'm just going to let that hang there. Self-important progressives are killing our chances to reclaim this country. I'm just hoping that they hear that over there in the office. So it's 56.
Can you hear me in the back?
Can you hear me in the back of the room? It's true. So what are we going to do? We're going to have Maxine Waters come on. We're going to talk about health care in the next hour in a big way. We're going to talk a little about Walmart. And we're gonna do Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Walmart is bad business, man. Bad business.
Now they want to just hire healthy people.
Yeah, only healthy people.
And the way they're gonna do that is they're adding calisthenics into all occupational things there. Yeah. It's like if they say, hey, take that over and put that on that shelf, but run around the building twice. What the hell is that?
Well, might as well. They're usually locked in, aren't they?
Yeah, we're gonna be at. I don't have time to do that. O'Neill's next week, but stay with us. 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Getting some email from condescending feminists. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, the tone. You know what's hilarious about people that say our show is like frat house? It's like not one of us that I know of has ever been in a frat house. Not one of the writers, not one of the guys on this show. It is such a condescending sort of women's point of view to say, like, it's so frat house. I've never set foot in a damn frat house. And you can shut your mouths because, to be honest with you, it's got no bearing on what's going on here. Just because you don't get the humor and you're not funny might mean, that's your issue. Look at this letter. My take is that misogyny like racism lies just beneath the surface of much, not all, of the frat house humor on the show. Well, listen, genius. Here she goes. Ask yourself, oh my God, I sound like Limbaugh all of a sudden. Ask yourself, why are you so afraid of a U.S. general who is a woman? It had nothing to do with her being a woman. I'm afraid of anybody in a uniform. Isn't that the logical response? Have you seen pictures of General Karpinski? She was an imposing figure. And a male or female doesn't make any difference. Why wouldn't I be afraid? It had nothing to do with her being a general. She could have been a cop. She could have been anybody. Could have been a man or a woman. Someone with a uniform and a gun. I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid. Frightening. Am I wrong? All right. Maybe I'm wrong. All right, so why would the show, if done by women, be a lesbian catfight? Why not? All right, that being said, I listen for the politics and continue to trust that evolution will, in fact, take place. What a condescending, horrendous example of liberal thought. Anyways, moving on.
I've never been in a frat house. When I was in college, it was considered dumb.
Who the hell would join a frat?
I don't know.
I mean, if frat houses had the type of intelligent, satirical, and goofy humor that we had, I'd be impressed.
But you know what's going to happen now?
What?
All the people that were in fraternities are going to start emailing us. Well, how dare you talk about frat houses like that?
Let's talk to some of the women who actually were at frat houses often. to tell their stories. You know, how about that? It blows my mind that they trivialize, you know, and I am not, look, my wife is a comedian. And, you know, certainly she'll do a little misogyny jokes herself sometimes. And, you know, it's just the nature of comedy. It doesn't always have to. This analysis of it as being, you know, racist or misogynistic is just ridiculous. All right, do you have something to say? Okay, here we go. Let's make a nice smooth segue into our next guest. She's a Democratic Congresswoman, Maxine Waters. She's on the phone from Washington, D.C. She's L.A.'s Congresswoman. Good morning, Maxine. How are you?
Good morning. How
are
you doing?
Good morning.
You guys are having a good time this morning.
I got a little angry.
Good a time for some.
I get angry when I get emails from women calling us frat house-like, because I don't like frat houses.
I heard you.
All right, so let's talk, Congresswoman, a little bit about the indictments that are coming down. They seem definitely imminent. From all indications, they're gonna happen. Who do you think's gonna go down?
Well, it looks as if we're gonna have. Well, I don't know. See, I am. I'm not so sure these indictments are gonna go down.
Really?
No,
oh, come on!
Really
I can't.
Not.
Oh.
I'm really not so sure. I know there's been a lot of speculation about it. I know that Karl Rove. You know, it's thought to be the big target.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, the vice president's guy is thought to be the big target. I don't know. It's been too long.
Yeah.
What's taking it so long?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I'm just hoping that it's because Patrick Fitzgerald is so damn efficient. I mean, what do you make of that guy? I'm impressed so far.
I'm very impressed. I think that... you know, a lot of work has been done. I think that, you know, obviously there's been a very thorough investigation.
Yeah.
And so he better come up with something, huh?
Congresswoman, there has been speculation over the last 24 hours that this grand jury may indict based on violating Joe Wilson's civil rights. Do you think that that is a proper use of the civil rights statutes?
I'm not so sure. I do think that there's been a lot of lying going on. I think they've lied to the investigators. I think that, you know, it's more conspiracy. And I think, really, the conspiracy touches the vice president. Where did we first hear about Valerie Plame?
Yeah.
I think that I'm not so sure it's a civil rights violation, but I do think there's lying, there's conspiracy, there's a lot of things that he could be charged with.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, when you look at how Washington, how the White House is doing its business, you're in Washington.
Yes.
Do you sense a palpable difference in the way, for example, the White House is dealing with the House of Representatives?
Well, I sense that the White House is in disarray. I sense that. And I sense that they're trying to manage the news, and they're not doing a very good job of it. I think that it's obvious that something is wrong, that they're scared. They may know already that there are going to be some indictments. But, yeah, you feel it here.
Well, tell us, Congresswoman Waters, tell us about the eminent domain legislation that's on the agenda this week. Sensenbrenner's got a bill. Tell us what it is and whether it's good legislation from where you're sitting.
Well, to tell you the truth, that Supreme Court decision on Kello that basically says you can take private property for private use really stunned me.
Anyone's, right? Anybody, right? They can
anybody.
Just, that's ridiculous.
Anybody. And in that Kello decision, you know, when they allowed for the taking of private property of these homes, when they wanted to develop some condominiums, we thought, I mean, most people thought that the Supreme Court would come down on the side of property rights, right? But no, they came down on the side of greedy developers and local elected officials who in bed with greedy developers. And so now we're going to try and fix it. We're going to try and say that you can't have any federal money if, in fact, you're going to use this money to do any kind of development and use eminent domain to take private property for private use.
Before we amend it, can we put some affordable housing where the White House is? Can we just...
That wouldn't be such a bad idea.
Yeah, right. Now, Congresswoman, I know that you, as do I, pay attention to what's going on in Haiti. Certainly, the tropical storm Alpha has devastated the island, or actually the country, somewhat. But we've also heard about some violence there. A UN peacekeeper was killed recently, shot near Cité Soleil, which is a gigantic slum in Port-au-Prince. And they've called off elections, or they've postponed them now for the fourth time this year. They were supposed to be November 20th. Now they are reset for a date in December. Are you confident at all that there will be an election in Haiti before the end of this year?
Well, the problem is the incompetent puppet government. La Tortue, who was brought in from Boca Raton to run Haiti after the coup d'etat, does not have a clue. And so they don't know how to get the election committee together called CEP. They don't know how to include Lavalas, the party of the past president, Aristide. And Munistef is not... trained to do the kind of so-called peacekeeping that it's supposed to do, and you have all this hunger, this poverty, this devastation in Haiti, and in Cité Soleil, where people are just struggling for basic, things like water and food. They are shooting at Munistef because Munistef is afraid of them. They're shooting, and the United States has a hand in this. We really have... basically destabilize the country. We're not putting any money in there to deal with these very, very deep problems of hunger and no housing. So we've created this mess, and I would hope that somebody in this administration would step up to the plate and do something about it. Condoleezza Rice doesn't have a clue, and so it's a mess.
Now, Congresswoman, do you have any hope that Jean-Bertrand Aristide will come back to Haiti and finish out his term?
That's not going to happen. I think that, his term will be up soon, and even though it was certainly a coup d'etat that the country took place, Haiti is worse off now than it's ever been. They need to ask him to come back just to destabilize Haiti, if for no other reason, and get the elections going so that they could get a new president. But they don't have any intentions of doing that.
Well, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, is great talking to you as usual.
Okay, guys.
You take
care.
Have a good
time.
Okay, thank you.
All right, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Can we get back to our frat house ways now? All right, in a second, we're going to talk a little bit about Walmart's new hiring practices, how they're going to cut corners by, denying more people health care and hiring people that hopefully won't get sick. But you know what's interesting to me about that is that a lot of Walmarts hire old people as greeters, so I guess they're figuring they don't need to cover them. They're probably on Medicare already, so they're disposable.
Well, either that or they're going to time them in the 50-yard dash or make them lift up 70 pounds worth of stuff.
We'll explain that in a second. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Did someone call in with the Jewish information, John? No?
I think they might actually be calling with relation to current events.
Oh, that Staff Sergeant. All right, well, let's get into it. Staff Sergeant George. Oh, God, I've got to make this segue. Can we all pull it together? No laughing. No laughing. All right, this is serious. All right, look, 2,000 people are dead.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hey!
We're having a good time, man. We're getting a lot of support email from feminists around the country, man.
Yeah.
Coming out.
Right on.
Telling that woman who wrote us that last email to grow up. That's right. Can't we have a little fun? Some people actually writing in supporting frat houses, saying that some women are writing, I hung out with some very intelligent frat guys. We shouldn't look at that as an insult. Unfortunately, the frats I had experiences with when I was in college and when I was in high school were just a bunch of idiots. But and also someone wrote in an email saying, why don't we question the integrity or the behavior of sororities? You know, these consumerist image mongering, you know, empty vessels that join those things. We've actually provoked quite a discourse. One guy sent in a joke from the 70s. He said that it reminds me of a joke that was going around the 70s. The joke is, how many feminists does it take to screw in a light bulb? What's the answer? I screwed it up. Wait.
There's nothing funny about that.
There's nothing funny about that.
I just wanted someone else to take the brunt of that. All right, here we go. I didn't say it, man. It's Pashman. And then Riley said it. No. I just forgot it, and I didn't have the email in front of me. But thanks for all the emails. It's very exciting. Then there was the one guy feminist. The one guy is like, you guys are a little sexist. Like, come on, man. Come on. Take it easy, will you? Let's at least, I don't even know what I want to say about that.
Relax.
I just found it contemptible. Anyways, Walmart. Let's talk about Walmart. This is amazing to me because Walmart, their big plan is Walmart found a way to cut employee benefit costs, and that's hire people that aren't sick or likely to get sick soon. Make sure that all the jobs have some manual labor, some difficult tasks that could be achieved, that couldn't be achieved by the sickly. Now, this is amazing. That's your job application, is to be a stock person or to be a cashier at Walmart. And they go, you know, well, drop and give me 20. Run around the building. Can you pick this up, old man? You know, look, you're sweating. Maybe you're going to get sick. And they tell you that they won't hire you. The thing I don't understand here, though, is that they do have a lot of old people on the payroll. And I'm just assuming that is because those people don't need to be covered by coverage within the organization. Now, I guess some of the problems is that they're saying that they will not cover their employees.
Now 46% of the children of Walmart's employees, totally 1.33 million people, are either uninsured or they're on Medicaid.
But this is such a huge problem, man. This is such a huge problem across the board, and I think it's important that we talk about it. This comes from this information. There apparently is an internal memo sent out to Walmart's board of directors proposing a bunch of ways to hold down spending on health care and other benefits, and also trying to seek to minimize the damage to their already heinous reputation. Among the recommendations, they were going to hire more part-time workers, all right? They're going to, as we said, not hire people who might get sick. They're going to reduce 401k contributions. They're trying to get younger workers to come in by maybe offering education benefits as opposed to health care, and also to discourage unhealthy job applicants. And memo suggested that Walmart arrange for all jobs, as I said, to include some jogging or heavy lifting or maybe some sporting activities. It's like, could you put that on that shelf up there, but do it with a pole vault?
It is incredible what Walmart's doing. And I have to say, this is of particular interest to me because I found out that, and it was a listener, I think, that told us that Walmart is the largest private employer of African Americans in America.
Right.
And many of these African Americans have insufficient or non-existent health care coverage for themselves or their kids. Now, health care coverage is becoming a national issue, just like we talked about yesterday with GM making a deal with the United Auto Workers to cut health care costs. That makes perfect sense. But when you start talking about, you know, not hiring people based on whether, you know, what, you're going to look at them and think, well, your eyes are kind of cloudy, I guess we can't really hire you. How do you do that?
Well, the bottom line is, Riley, here's what's got to happen. I mean, yeah, first of all, in just dealing with Walmart, here's a great example. Full-time Walmart employees earn an average of around $17,500 a year. 38% of Walmart workers spent more than one-sixth of their Walmart income on health care last year. So dig this. I mean, when are we going to wake up to this problem? There are 45 million uninsured Americans in this country, and that number is supposed to rise to 80 million in the next 2 years. People whose spouses die with medical bills get strapped with debts. People can no longer declare bankruptcy as easily to get out from under repercussions of illness. I mean, that's some frightening numbers there, too, because, you know, when you look at bankruptcy, you know, apparently 28% of those filing for a medical bankruptcy did so because of illness or injury. And employee spending for health insurance coverage has increased 126% between 2000 and 2004. This is crazy. Now, when you're looking at 45 million uninsured Americans and the potential of 80 million Americans, I don't know what the hell people are thinking or who they think they are, but the middle class has got to wake up and realize that they are just one injury, one illness away from being poor. The middle class are just poor people with good credit, and to assume that this idea that there has to be some sort of national health plan in place is somehow feeding this idea of social programs or glutted government or whatever the case, you guys have got to wake up. Because of the legislation that these Republicans are putting in place, it is almost impossible to sue a corporation for abuse or criminal activity that got you sick. It is almost impossible to declare bankruptcy without paying something, even if you get sick, and it's impossible to get effective insurance. So the bottom line is this administration, the Republican agenda, and the corporate agenda is that you are disposable. And they know that. They know they can just hire a kid. They can hire an immigrant worker. They can hire just a desperate person who has no choice but to work for nothing with no health care, because they don't care if you die. You are replaceable. You are just disposable people. And until this country wakes up and starts trying to get the health care system in place here so more than 80 million people don't have to go without insurance.
Welcome to America. Don't get sick. It's as simple as that.
But that's what people think. Middle class people think that illness is what? That's something that happens to other people? I don't understand it. I don't even understand what middle class people are anymore. We got radio theater coming up. We've also got, what else we got?
A little of this and a little of that.
All right, beautiful. More good times. More emails. More emails. Keep them coming. 27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater. Today, we finally answer that burning question, what if everyone on Morning Sedition was a girl? Let's tune in now to Morning She-dition.
Welcome back to Morning She-dition with Martha and Martha. Later on, we'll have Joni K Street, Sister Milfington, and of course, Bruce Cherry. But first, it's time for Martha Riley's Bitch of the Week. Who's your bitch this week, Martha?
Same bitch it is every week. My ex-girlfriend, Tracy. She'll sleep with anybody. She even slept with our technical producer, Crystal Lo Presto.
Oh, let go of it. We were drunk. It didn't mean nothing.
I'm not talking to you, Crystal. You'll stay in that booth if you know what's good for you.
And that's Martha Riley, bitch of the week. Now it's time for the iNews 5000. Today's headline, Ellen DeGeneres finds new love. Ellen DeGeneres finds new love. Translation, Martha Riley's ex-girlfriend now sleeping with Ellen DeGeneres.
Crystal, stop laughing. That's not funny. Come out of that booth.
That's how it would be if everyone on Morning Sedition was a girl. This has been Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
All right, man. So look at this. Yeah, it's 35 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. And I think we have we've got an email, but now, of course, I can't find it because I'm a moron. Here's something for you, Riley. You didn't speculate on this. Some guy wrote, Spurs will take the Gunners down this weekend.
Oh, no, they won't. Yeah. You must be out of your cotton picking mind.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why don't you lay it out for us? Explain to me why this is important.
This is important. This is what's called the North London Derby between Tottenham Hotspurs, which is my wife's British football team, and the Arsenal Gunners, which is my British football team. And let me tell you something, Spurs are going down.
So do you and your wife fight about this stuff?
Nah, not really. She doesn't watch it that much.
All right, let's get to the core, the root of the whole feminist controversy that was created earlier this afternoon.
Oh, you're going again with this morning.
No, listen to this. Since you guys are fond of stereotypes, just as I was defending you to my former Shiite Muslim, now Buddhist feminist wife who called you misogynistic, you start in on frat houses. Thanks a lot. That's from Dennis Sigma Chi, Southern Baptist.
Ah, I knew it.
Computational astrophysicist, Horry County Democrat of the Year, Young Democrat Advisor, Progressive Farm Boy Deer Hunter. Not big on stereotypes.
Not big on stereotypes.
Yeah. Dig that.
Democrat of the Month and a deer hunter?
Yeah, he's got it all going, this guy.
Wow.
So, look, this has been fun.
I'm surprised he had time to email.
Look at this guy. So, according to you, torture never produces truthful info, just lies. Why would a torture person only lie? What if they got nothing to say, and they're going to continue being tortured until they say something? That's not so tough to answer, is it, buddy?
Who said that? The same
Who the hell knows? Who the hell knows? All right, okay, so there you go. What are we going to talk about now, Riley? Okay, let me do a rundown of this.
Yeah.
I just want you people to know, I wanted to do more emails, but of course I can't find the one that I was looking for that would have gotten me into trouble. And maybe I should print these things out instead of just run through this thing like this. Because here we go. This morning for you, and for the past few mornings, you seem to have been dropping some broad hints that the future Morning's Edition may be in doubt. Say it ain't so, fellas. My wife and I are huge fans. There's no show like yours anywhere else on the dial, or at Air America for that matter. If anything happened to you guys, it would leave a huge hole in our mornings. Don't make me go back to Imus. Well, you know what? It's interesting because our CEO listens to Imus as well. And if I could just get him to listen to our show for maybe 15 minutes, maybe we can get some answers around this thing. But right now, let me tell you this. Here's some scandals that are going on in the GOP that I think it's important just to keep a scorecard, to keep a docket if you want. You know, Tom DeLay obviously being indicted for conspiring to violate Texas state election law and conspiracy to launder money. David Safavian, man, I can't tell you how many emails I have gotten about the pronunciation of that guy's name. David Safavian.
Did you say pronunciation?
Pronunciation, that's right, man. You got a problem?
Oh, Lord.
One of my secret comedy heroes, Norm Crosby. See, look at that. No, not even that. His whole act was about that, all right?
Don Pushman. Call Dan Diction over
all right,
here.
Don Pushman on the mic. That's our CEO's unintentional nickname for Dan. Here we go. David Safavian indicted. The Bush administration's former chief procurement official was indicted Wednesday by a federal grand jury on charges of making false statements and obstructing investigations into high-powered GOP lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Connect the dots to Jack Abramoff. Mm. Indicted and charged with 5 counts of wire fraud and 1 count of conspiracy from a purchase of a fleet of Florida gambling boats from a businessman who was later killed in a gangland-style hit. And then, of course, you got Bill Frist under formal investigation by the SEC for insider trading. You've got espionage in the White House. The U.S. Marine who was charged with espionage while working for Vice President Dick Cheney's office.
Filipino guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the payment. How about the columnists? The administration using public funds to pay off right-wing media commentators. It never ends. And now with these indictments coming down, exciting stuff. I didn't like Maxine Waters saying that there might not be any indictments. Come on. Come on.
She's speculating. Everybody's speculating. Everybody gets to play the pundit.
But I read stuff, Riley, that says I talked to a guy who knew a guy, and that means that guy's got to know something. Am I wrong?
Well, if that were the case, then everybody in Washington, D.C. would be indicted.
Yeah.
And they'd all be walked out. Because, I mean, everybody has got the inside talking to a lawyer who's close to this one, who's close to that one, or someone who speaks to Karl Rove's lawyer,
yeah,
or somebody that Scooter Libby, you know, designed Scooter Libby's crutch. All of these different things right now mean nothing. And I got it. I said it earlier, and I'm going to say it again. Congratulations to Patrick Fitzgerald for keeping this so close to the vest that nobody really knows what's going to happen tomorrow. Nobody even knows if it's going to happen tomorrow. Nobody knows if they're going to extend the, or not even extend the grand jury, call a new grand jury tomorrow. Nobody knows if all of these folks are going to be let out of their offices in handcuffs tomorrow, which would be my preferred scenario.
Yeah, I tell you, man, liberals are, they crack me up. I'm just looking at some of these emails. I mean, we're all in the same boat, but it's just incredible how little it would take to get a massive argument. This is a sort of festering, weird defense of this and that. All right, look, but that's the nature of who we are, and it's okay. Listen to this. Pornographers are not so quick to get on board with the video iPod, my friends. I haven't got a video iPod. Does anyone in here have one? No?
I don't know. They've only been out for like a week and a half.
All right, well, they're concerned that marketing their product, that being pornography, to be played on a delivery system designed and owned by younger people would, open the door to a whole slew of obvious legal problems. So to avoid legal problems, the porn industry is trying to figure out a way they can verify customers' age through credit card purchases. They're not going to give out any free content. They're going to try and code content so it can be protected and not shared. But apparently some companies have already started marketing for the device. One company started offering downloadable video shot from the male porn star's point of view on the iPod. Uh-huh. On a little video iPod, you can see the point of view of the guy holding the camera. it seems that that's just one step away from actually being able to strap it on to yourself. You know, I mean, am I wrong, or is this getting too frat house? Is it frat house? Maybe you just strap it on to yourself? I don't know. But this is the interesting thing, though, that who knew we were ever going to live in a country that would get to the point where there are actual problems, legal issues about portable porn. Personally, I think it's fascinating that a guy, no matter who you are, even if it's like an inch square, just a little inch square with something that looks like it's going in and out of something else, you're like, oh, God, that's terrific. It's amazing how it just triggers your brain, no matter how big it is. It's like, you know, you can have like a ripped piece. Remember when you were a kid and you had the one ripped piece of paper that was from a porno magazine that had half of something going on? You're like, oh, my God. And it's, you had it for weeks?
Oh, please. How about ever watch cable and you can sometimes, there's like a mixed channel.
Excuse me. Been on the road before. All right. Well, I've had to de-scramble porn in my hotel room before.
Yeah, man, I'd sit there for hours just trying to de-scramble. Like, oh,
and then you realize like it was the Disney Channel. Like, you thought it was a nipple and it was Mickey Mouse's nose. You were looking at it for like 5 hours.
And you kept going? That's the scary part.
You won't have that problem now.
Well, apparently there's a lot of problems with this. In upstate New York, a guy was arrested for watching pornography while he was driving his car.
Well, you know where that came from.
What?
Somebody actually was driving past a car on a parkway, saw the porn, had an accident.
Yeah.
So now, whatever municipality that is, they ended up making it illegal to watch porn in your car.
So some dude is watching porn in his car responsibly, not screwing anything up, and some idiot drives by, wants to watch another guy's porn while he's driving his car. And he's the guy who gets in a wreck and ruins the party for everybody?
Yeah.
The idiot that can't get his own porn in his car?
Right. Watch what happens just throughout the South if they start marketing porn on iPods. You watch them find a way. These state legislatures, which of course have been gerrymandered into being dominated by Republicans, they will find a way to outlaw iPod porn. You watch.
Well, you know, I imagine that's one of those First Amendment issues. That's going to be a fight because this happened with a lot of stuff. I mean, this has happened in porn in any format.
But you know what? The porn industry is so greedy, they don't want to spend the money for a First Amendment fight at this point. They just want to make money. That's why there will be no porn content on an iPod that you don't pay for.
Okay,
right. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, Presto will figure out a way to download
just
it.
Just watch the scrambled image. That's
all. I can make home videos.
Yeah, you go. Oh. He's going to want to watch those. You're going to be watching those alone on your iPod.
Uh-oh. You're crying.
Yeah. Look, there's me when I had somebody.
Oh.
Look at me try. All right, you're going to figure out. See, now this isn't frat house humor. This is just guys talking.
Yeah.
This is how guys talk. I love all of our listeners. I really do. It has been fun.
Did you see this email we got from a chapter president of the National Organization for Women out of Kalamazoo, Michigan?
Oh, are you kidding me?
Not a joke, no.
Oh, right.
Her name is April, the now chapter president of Kalamazoo Now in Michigan. It says, regarding your feminist controversy this morning, so it's swelled to a controversy. Now we've got chapter presidents of Now chiming in on
that's
this controversy.
That's big.
As an activist in the feminist movement, I must say that far too many feminists take themselves too seriously. I loved your "if everyone was a woman" bit. Some people just need to lighten up. Now, that's one side of it. I mean, we'll take...
That's from the National Organization of Women. This is probably the biggest press this show has gotten.
Hey, wait a minute. You know what? I don't understand. What? This is the one day. I don't know if there have been that many other days when all our guests have been women.
Yeah, well, you...
Maxine Waters and Janice Karpinski, hello.
Yeah, that's a setup, and I ain't taking it.
Yeah. I just had a punchline log jam.
I know.
I'm not going to walk into that one.
Here's the wind-up. Here's the pitch.
All right, so we'll parse some more emails. We'll come back with some closing statements, and we'll do a cliff note. So hang out. It's 46 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken, King of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
If 50 past the hour with Lamb this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Thank you for all the wonderful supportive emails over the last month or so, and me, you know, being frightened about my job, which is still, you know, things are unclear. I do know one thing, that our beloved Dan Pashman is going to be moving over to the Randy Rhoads show to cover for her producer, who is going out on maternity leave. So this is... this is actually Dan's last day on Morning Sedition.
What?
For the time being. He's going to Slovakia tonight to visit his fiance. When he comes back, he has to start producing Randy's show, and who the hell knows what's going to happen here. So, you know, that's a sad thing, because Dan and I go back to the beginning. I remember walking in the first day of work, was that a year and a half ago, and thinking like, oh, Christ, who's the guy with the crew cut? How the hell did he fit in? So, Dan, you sad?
I am sad. I'm certainly sad to leave you guys. I mean, you know, anyone who listened to the show just today, you know, hear how much fun we have on the show here every day. So I'll miss having that much fun hanging out with you guys.
I'm not going to get all choked up because this is crazy.
Now, of course, when I stroll into work at 10 a.m.
Yeah, you're not going to feel so bad, are you?
I might not feel quite so bad.
You're going to recognize that look, that the sort of weird 1,000-yard stare that you get from living the hours, Ron. You're actually able to sleep normally, and you won't be drained by the hours. You'll be drained by Randy. So that's going to be an entire different experience. You're just going to be a husk of a person. She's going to feed on you, Dan.
Yeah.
I may actually have a life, Mark. So I'm very excited about that.
Don't put that in my face, dude. You and your life. Look, I'm giving my life here for the cause, man.
Yeah. But I'll come in early on Fridays to help you guys eat the City Bakery delivery.
Yeah, where is that thing, by the way?
Oh, boy.
We were just talking. You know, it's so funny because we were talking about the old days, you know, before I knew how to do this. And I used to, you know, have those horrendous fights with Jonathan Larson. And there was that one morning where the food was supposed to come and it didn't come. And I was throwing fits.
Every segment was like Mount Krakatoa.
It was like Mount Krakatoa.
Where's the food?
Oh my God!
You would be mid sentence talking about, like, you know, the Bush administration, and when Riley would talk, you'd be waving and motioning at us through the glass, you know, with these glares, waving your arms like, "Where is it? Where is it?"
Oh, and every time we came, it's not here yet, Mark. It's all his fault.
Who's that, Larson?
I'm sure. Yeah.
Oh man, that guy. I wonder if he went to therapy to have me removed from his head.
I'd have a talk with you after that show, Mark. I was like, "Look, I like the food too."
Oh man, what was wrong with me?
But we do have a show to do.
The genius of Dan Pashman is that he can pacify these situations. I mean, it is great to have him go working at Randy.
Oh, how about when you... it might ruin the network. What if you pacify Randy Rhoads? You actually talk her down, and her show's just sort of like, everything's okay today. Dan Pashman could be the undermining of the entire Air America
project.
I'm going
to change Randy's theme song to Hello Starshine.
I remember the day that Brendan took over responsibilities for Larson, and because Larson had gone away, and that's a whole other story that'll have to be covered when this show no longer exists. But Brendan walks in, and you know, remember I started to go into my one of my little fits. It's like, you know, what the hell was that about? Well, I started yelling about something. He goes, do you want to do this now, or do you want to wait a minute and talk about it as an adult? Do you want to try to talk about this adult, or should we wait till after the show? And there was that moment where I'm like, and then you know what I did? The funny thing, you know what I did? I went out into the hallway and yelled at Dan.
If he's going to talk to me like that, you know what I mean?
I don't need a bully on this show.
You snapped us into shape, McDonald, that's for sure. So look, next week, Morning Sedition will return to O'Neill's Restaurant for another live broadcast next Thursday, November 3rd, God willing. O'Neill's won us over with the free bagels and the Lox Walks last time we did the broadcast. And if you come down, they put rolls on the table. They got muffins. It's great. We're going to have Lisa Lampanelli, Vanity Fair's James Wolcott will be there. That's next Thursday, November 3rd, here in New York at O'Neill's on West 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. If you want to fly in and come, why don't you come? I don't know. It might be our last live broadcast. So
we got news.
What happened?
Harriet Myers.
Yeah.
There are reports she's withdrawing her nomination.
I thought she was dead.
No. Oh.
Dear God.
Riley gets no lunch now.
Oh!
No. I said that she wouldn't make it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think, remember,
but
weeks ago.
Is the withdrawal like an excommunication? Like it didn't count? It never happened?
No, I knew that Bush would not...
take her, would not, you know, like, fire her. I knew that. But I figured somebody would prevail on her to withdraw her name.
How do you like that? She withdrew.
Name.
That's amazing.
Well, yeah, she, quote, withdrew.
Right, I mean, no, well, she, of course. But, I mean, this is a, this has big implications.
It has,
I mean,
gigantic.
What the hell is going to happen now? Now we're waiting for indictments in the next, like, lunatic that he's going to nominate?
A nut bar, right.
A complete nut bar. Oh, my
Can
God.
Can you say Michael Luttig?
I never used the word nut
Can
bar before.
Can you say Edie Jones?
Chris, what's most important is, please, find the clip of Riley making that bet, because, you know, we're not going to buy him dinner if we don't have to buy him dinner.
Right. I just said she'd be the nominee.
All right,
that
we're going to check on that.
We'll let the tape decide.
All right, yeah. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. President Bush's recent claim that 10 Al-Qaeda plots have been thwarted includes plans that were just on Al-Qaeda's wish list and not fully formulated plots. It's obvious that many of the plans would never have been acted upon. One item on a list was described merely as unnamed Tony Danza pilot. Other items on the wish list include breathable cotton beheading hoods and access to the 90 virgins before the suicide thing actually happened. Now I'm rushing. Slow down, man. I don't have time, though. We're the ones that I want to do.
Yeah, okay.
All right. All right.
Halloween.
No. California has set an execution date for a convicted murderer and gang member who was later nominated for a Nobel Prize for his efforts to curb youth violence from behind bars. Stanley Williams said, if I have to die, he didn't want a lethal injection. He would prefer to die like a gang member and be shot from a moving car. Sex offenders in New Jersey will be confined to their homes on Halloween and forbidden from answering the door for trick-or-treaters. Sex offenders are not allowed to open the doors to trick-or-treaters. Unfortunately, the law doesn't cover them sticking something through the mail slot. Phrase of the day is too long. Just drop it into conversation. Sure, Bush wants you to think he's breaking up an Al-Qaeda plot every day. He wants you to think that we're winning Iraq, balancing the budget, and fixing global warming. Wake up, sheeple. We got to go.
We got to go. John Edwards, Margaret Cho, tomorrow, Air America Radio.